Hey, everybody, it's Mary Lou Tyler. This week's guest is Jason Cutter. He's the founder and CEO of Cutter Consulting Group, and we'll talk about the variety of services he offers, which you guys will want to check out for sure. But what really got me excited about this interview today was the title of his new book, which came out in August of 2020. It's called Selling with Authentic Persuasion: Transform from Order Taker to Quota Breaker. That's a tongue twister, Jason. I really love that term, authentic persuasion. Can you tell us about, first of all, welcome to the podcast. And secondly, can you tell us how you came up with that title? I love that title.
Well, first, thank you for having me. And it's funny saying it as a tongue twister. I have said it enough times now, but in the beginning, I would get it backwards, the order taker to quota breaker part. So it took me a little while. Where did that come from? So I was actually writing the book well before it came out without a title, without really a without a specific goal in mind other than to get out of my head 17 years worth of experience that I felt could help people who kind of went down a similar path as me, where you didn't plan on being a salesperson. You kind of stumbled into sales or defaulted into sales. And then here you are, and probably under-trained, under-coached, under-managed, under-led, and trying to figure it out or failing and doing something else. And so that's when I started writing the book, and I actually had it written and it was edited. And I thought, man, I don't even have a title for this thing. I've written it. I actually wrote it once, threw it away, wrote it a second time from scratch, and then still didn't have a title. And I had a mentor who came up with the transform from order taker to quota breaker. And that was great, but it didn't really help with the book. And then one day I just like, I need a title. I don't care. I was sitting on the floor 6:30 in the morning, and literally I started writing phrases and it jumped out. 5 minutes later, I was buying domains on my phone on GoDaddy, and then, you know, coming up with it and did just like lightning speed from there.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love that term. As we were talking before we got officially started, I love the word authentic because it does really represent where we are today and where we've been really all the time we've been selling, but a good focus now, especially on authenticity. And we have tools that are taking that human side. I have a colleague that is always talking about the fact that we're losing that human touch because we have so many tools that allow us to have conversations while we're sleeping with people. So that term is really important to me, but the two combined, authentic persuasion, because persuasion for me, especially top of funnel, is where it's all at. I mean, we've all studied Cialdini, the science of persuasion or principles of persuasion, and trying to encapsulate that into a sales conversation that resonates, that advances people into the pipeline, it has been almost like a lifelong study for me. So the fact that you put it, the two together, you just have to get your book. I mean, it's just like, oh my gosh. So tell us about, you know, walk us through the book and in the context of authentic persuasion, where do we start with you on this journey to become a better salesperson and a more authentic yet persuasive sales executive? How does that start?
Well, and when I wrote the book and I structured a certain way, and then when I realized authentic persuasion was really the capsule for it, I broke the book up into three sections. So there's section one is authenticity, section two is persuasion, section three is the intangibles. And just to clarify, like I talk to a lot of people about this, and some people say, well, I don't like persuasion. You know, they think persuasion is the same as manipulation, which, you know, it's all about the intent. Some people like convince. And so there's different words people can use, but the concept is that the authentic piece is you coming from a place that's genuine and real for you with the goal of wanting to help somebody else and be of service. And then also, and this is really where it's important, is understanding your fears, your limitations in your head, your strengths, and then also why you want to be successful in sales. What would you put on the vision board? Why do you want it? And of course, everyone says, well, I just want to make more money. But like, why? Why do you want that money? Because the money's just a vehicle for something. So what is it that you want the money for? Or maybe it's not about the money. It's because you want to help other people, or there's a different thing inside of you more intrinsically. Because the big thing is, if you're not authentically, intrinsically motivated, then you're going to need the carrot or the stick all the time. Sales is rough. And so when that 50th person says no for the day, like, are you going to pick up the phone and make the 51st call because, you know, a boss is standing over your shoulder threatening you or bribing you to close a deal? Or are you just going to do it because you know that that's what you want to do and for your own reasons? So that's part of it. The persuasion piece is where it gets into a little more of the strategies. A lot of people, they want to go straight into the strategies, right? A lot of people, okay, tell me what I should say. How do I close deals? What do I do? It's like, that doesn't matter until you have the authenticity piece set, because maybe you're parroting what somebody does. Okay, well, Grant Cardone or Gary Vee says this, so I'm going to try that. It's like, unless it's you and you know why you're doing it, it doesn't matter.
Right, right. I definitely can see that. Even in my work, most people do know that I'm a sales process expert, and there's no word skill in the word in the term sales process, but it does amplify and accentuate when we have sales skills issue problems, and also mindset. And the mindset, I think, is where you're hitting with the authenticity piece. And I just had a conversation with a young sales executive the other day who was wanting to switch careers in sales because she was having difficulty waking up in the morning, getting excited about what she was selling. She didn't believe in her heart of hearts that she was adding value. Yeah. And having that realization and coming to that, I think, was a very brave thing. And she decided, I'm going to switch careers and go into, in this case, life sciences, because the firm that she decided to interview with is actually building applications to save lives. And you, when you can get your arms around something that big, that's bigger than you, then you wake up every morning and you're anxious to, you know, your question to yourself is, how can I add more value today? With whom can I have a conversation to add value? Is that what being authentic, that whole process is going through, that mindset change of, you're here to serve, you're here to help people. What you sell is valuable to the folks that you're targeting in your target audience.
Yes. And kind of like the person you were talking about, if you don't see the value in it and you don't believe in it, or you don't see how that's something you want to do, then do something else. I mean, part of life is figuring out what you don't want to do just as much as figuring out what you do want to do. If you're going to be selling something or helping somebody and persuading them to take action, do you believe in what you're helping them do? Unfortunately, there's a lot of people get into sales and they usually are the ones that give sales the bad name and the bad connotation in the world, right? Why the public does not like salespeople or is guarded and worried about salespeople versus other professions. It's because of salespeople who are just motivated by their own needs and making money. And they don't necessarily care what they're selling. They don't care what happens to their prospect. And that's not what matters at the end of the day. And so for me, it's about people who want to do it and come from a place where they're not sure how they can do it. And then that's where we get into the persuasion piece, which is the framework for moving somebody forward. And the big part of that, and I'm sure you do this on your side, and you know, this comes down to the persuasion and all those previous experts, but seeing it as your duty and responsibility, such that I know I'm selling something of value, where if I have the right person in front of me and they have problem X and I have solution X and they don't buy, I've actually failed them.
Right, right. So when we're moving from authenticity in that section, the authenticity section is really admitting or analyzing what fears we may have, what reservations, you know, where we're not necessarily confident, and focus on why we're in this profession. I just got a chuckle when you said that, like most people, you fell into selling. That is so true. So true. And there's still, because I teach at university every once in a while here in Iowa, And there are still no courses other than there's, you know, Dallas, Texas has a nice school now, but there are no real focused, concentrated courses on selling, selling skills, selling mindset, process. So we are kind of winging it when we go into a role in the hopes that people, the leadership there will have a onboarding or ramping plan for us. Where were you before that got you into sales?
Well, let's see. So my bachelor's degree is in marine biology. I tagged sharks for years in and around Santa Cruz and Monterey Bay, which I know is where you're from.
Beautiful area.
I did that. And I tell this story all the time because it's an indication of like where I've come to and why I think I can help people and kind of why I wrote the book. I grew up in an anti-sales household. My parents, great loving parents. My mom was a banker before she retired. My dad was an engineer and they moved their way up. But my mom, her first job was at a furniture store and she used to sit in the back office and hear what the salespeople would say and do to customers. Mm-hmm. And so she vowed just like never let that happen to our family. And so she was basically anti-salespeople. She just had the guard up. Right. She hated them. She saw what they did to people from the banking fraud side and she would have it out for them. So I grew up in that way, such that I would rather go tag sharks than deal with people. I literally didn't want to get a job dealing with people. I kept doing it, but like, I didn't want to. One thing led to another. That direction didn't go in my life. I ended up getting a job at Microsoft doing tech support for a couple of years back when that was still done in the US. And then we all lost our jobs to offshore outsourcing. And that's when family friends said, hey, here, I got a guy, he's growing a mortgage company. You could do that. It's not really that hard. It's the, you know, 2002, the housing market boom. And I don't consider that sales. I still screwed up a lot of stuff. Then, you know, one thing led to another 18 years later. So.
And here you are writing a book
here
on your experiences. Yeah. And that's the beauty of this. I think a lot of us could relate to the fact that we don't necessarily intend to go into this profession. Some of us feel like they've been sucked into it. I certainly felt that way because I was one of those engineers coming from the engineering side. I was an operating system programmer for Honeywell and Xerox. So I was definitely down in the bits and bytes of things. But I could also speak to clients and prospects and understand what their technical issues were and communicate that back to the programming team. So I was always put into client-facing positions and I just hated it because you, I'm just not a real big people person. And I thought, okay, since something is greater than me here, so I'm going to have to explore this. And I went into systems engineering. Now that was fun because that was putting together the puzzles once the rep sold something to figure out, can we really get this to work or not? And from there, you know, we were moving into from analog to digital. So this is back in, late 80s, I think. And they decided to fire all the salespeople because they weren't technical enough to understand the analog to digital conversion strategies, moving from 25 pair of telephone cable down to a 2-pair digital cable. So I was like, wave the magic wand over your head, Mary Lou, and now you're in sales.
Yep.
And that's how I got in. So I totally get this. But I totally always happened. Had kind of, I had the authentic side because I really was a problem solver and still am. And I'm very curious about why things don't work or why things should be a little bit better than they are. And I think that if I was in a situation where there was a high transaction volume, I would die on the vine. So my whole thing has always been coming from relationship selling, multi-stakeholder, large accounts, which there were a lot of working parts. And my engineering mind loves tinkering and loves all these disparate pieces that somehow piece together to make a whole. And from there, I study persuasion. So let's go into this persuasion piece. You said there's a framework. How does that look? Or where do you start with that? Are you looking at the person, the persona, the audience member? Where do you start with persuading people?
You know, really, there's a what I call the sales success fundamentals that every sales conversation has to have. And, you know, people use different terms, and there's always these general things that I've seen. And just to go back to your comment a minute ago, I think curiosity, especially from all the people that I've chatted with, other people that do what you and I do, curiosity is pretty much always the number one they throw out there as the trait for successful salespeople. And I just think in general, I think somebody who successful, right? Not money, but just successful in having a purpose and bringing value to other people and helping make things better in the world in general, curiosity, and then that problem solving piece. Most people do what you and I did, which is we have that and we do it. And then some reason we have to do that now with people. And then we figure out, wait, we can do that with people and it works pretty well. And I think the thing going into the persuasion piece is that the challenge is that most people think of sales and they think of dirty word sales. They think of manipulation. They think of tricking. Mm-hmm. They think of, you know, memorizing slick closing lines. Hey, Mary Lou, if I can show you a way to save $500 by Friday, is this something you'd be interested in doing? You know, that kind of like cheesy yes, it could work, but it's like, it's not what people want. So the problem is, in people's minds is they think that's what sales is, when in fact, I think your story epitomizes what sales should be, which is you want to solve a problem, you're curious, mm-hmm. you want to help make things better. It happens to be with this human in front of you. And then how can you do it? And not making it feel like sales. A lot of people are like, I don't want to get into sales. Like, no. Don't do sales, quote unquote, like you think. Like, this isn't Boiler Room or Wolf of Wall Street. Just actually help people and be a human and be a good person, and you'll actually do really well. So the persuasion framework for me, I've never come up with a better term for it. So I call it REFU. So rapport, empathy, trust, hope, urgency. And so those five things, in order and done completely. So the problem with most salespeople is they, like the slick ones that we don't like, is they start with the urgency. So it's like, hey, you need to buy now. We're having this. It's like then this pressure, but there's no rapport. There's no empathy, which is the discovery process. There's no trust built. So it just seems inauthentic and seems bad. It seems wrong. Same thing with the trust. A lot of salespeople go straight into trust, which is long monologues, which is big logos, which is, you know, testimonials and stories before the person even feels like you're listening to them or you care. And so you've got to do those phases. And when you do that, and you apply authentic persuasion to it, which is, this is my duty and responsibility. I have to help you. If I don't help you, I've failed you. Then it shifts the conversation, which goes into the subtitle of the book, which is transform from order taker to quota breaker. A lot of order takers do a great job with rapport, great job with empathy, right? They can build trust. The problem is then they're just, their main strategy is hope. Then they're just like, please buy from me. I hope you decide that you want to buy. I'm here for you. I'm ready.
Right. Right. Interesting. I'm trying to think, because again, here I go with my process hat. Trying to understand, because you said there's the order. So the first and foremost is building rapport, you said, correct?
Yep.
And building rapport, we've heard that term a lot. Is there a method that you could, that instantly you can align with that spits out rapport? Or is rapport a natural part of you as a human? Or can you practice rapport as a student of sales?
You can absolutely practice rapport building in sales, mm-hmm. in life. And, you know, for me, I use this tagline on my podcast all the time. Everything in life is sales. Right? So everything, whether you're not even a salesperson, you work on a team, maybe you're a marketing person listening to this show. If you want your boss to agree with your marketing strategy, or if you want the sales team to not think all of your leads suck, like that's all sales and persuasion in and around you at all times. So I think rapport, the two biggest things I tell people to do is get better at being curious and segue that into being very ultra interested. And the reason why that is because if you want people to be interested in you, you have to be interested in them. If you want them to find you interesting, then you first have to bring up things and ask questions and be curious and then be interested and excited. When you do that, it makes people like you because you're interested and you have things to talk about. And, you know, you could do this at the store where you just check, you know, ask somebody a question or seem interested in something they're doing or, you know, find something in common. And from an authentic place of actually being interested and actually being curious.
It's so funny you say this. I'm getting a flashback of my kids at the airport. I have the natural tendency to go up to strangers and, as my daughter says, get in their business. But from the mom's point of view, me, it's more about curiosity as to what brings you to the airport. You know, where are you traveling to? And it's funny because they just shrink whenever I start down those conversation lines, but I didn't realize that I was practicing rapport the whole time. It really, and I am curious about what they're doing and very interested and not judgmental in any way, shape, or form. And more like a sponge, just taking in what their experiences are. And I have a friend who told me a story one time that he went up to someone and asked them what they did. And that led to a 45-minute conversation, at the end of which the man said to my friend, "You are the most interesting person I've ever met." Yeah. And literally my friend just said, "What do you do?" And that was it.
And so what people are really craving in general, and if you apply this to your life and to your sales conversations, it's a game changer. What people want is somebody who actually cares, who's interested, and then listens. Right. Yeah. And I'm not going to blame social media for this, but I think it's magnifying it. People aren't, people don't necessarily have to listen anymore. And it's a skill that's not there. I mean, people are either too busy thinking about what they're going to say next, or they're too busy waiting for you to stop talking so they can go do something else, or they're multitasking. If you actually ask people questions, actually listen, actively listen, and then respond appropriately and don't make it about yourself, right? Like my grandma used to say, 2 ears and 1 mouth, right? Like if you listen twice as much as you talk, people will think you're the best person in the world. It will build the rapport and the empathy, and they will trust you with that. And it's funny, you're talking about your kids and you. Before I got into sales and really realized it, it used to drive me crazy too, because I'd go out to dinner with my parents. My mom, banker, doesn't like salespeople, but she actually likes people and she's just naturally curious. She likes to solve problems. So we would go to a restaurant. By the time we were done, usually the server would be sitting at the table with us, hanging out, ignoring all the other tables. And my mom would know everything about that person, where they went to school, how they grew up, like siblings, family, like personal problems, finance, like she would literally do everything. And I would be so embarrassed. And I'd be like this, me and my dad looking at each other. Then I realized I have that same skill. Grocery store, doesn't matter. I'll find out everything about somebody in like 5 minutes.
Yeah. And it's funny because it is a natural thing for me to do and I enjoy it. And you meet all these very interesting people as a result. And applying that though to the prospects and clients and folks that we're attempting to engage or persuade to get them to advance further into the pipeline or buy more product or expand their usage, whatever it is a trait that we as humans inherently know how to do. It's just that maybe maybe our muscles are a little weak in that area and need to, or maybe we don't have what I call that endurance muscle of keeping and repetitively practicing that so that you continually improve. So that's rapport and empathy. How do we kind of blend that into a nice mix of urgency?
Well, so we've got the rapport, the empathy, which I label as empathy because you want people to care about you, right? Because we, you know, going to the quote, right? People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So you can't build the trust until someone feels like you actually care about them. I mean, you can, but it's a rough game to try to do trust without the empathy part. So empathy is the discovery questions. It's the probing. Again, like we just talked about, you ask questions, let somebody else talk. They will feel like you care, even if you don't say anything smart. And they will feel like they can trust you. So then we have the trust. And then the hope is all about, you have this problem, I have this solution, and it's tailored to you. Because I asked you questions, because I got to know you, I know you have this need, I have this specific solution. Now, if you don't have that solution, I have a chapter in the book telling people no. Please, like, tell them no and do the right thing for many reasons.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
It's so important and it's so valuable. A lot of salespeople are afraid to do that because they're scarcity mode. But so when you give them the hope, it's like, hey, you have this problem. And then the urgency is just that final piece, which is the answer, I'm going to say, is pretty much always the answer is now. Like, the solution is now for whatever that step is. Now, if you're talking long B2B sales cycle committee, they've got to go talk to somebody else. The time when they've got to go do something else in that sales conversation is now, right? We've got to do
right.
this. And this is where salespeople, you know, come across, under their own motivations, which is what repels people, is the urgency is all about the other person's need. It's about that prospective customer's need, not your need, right? Not coming from a place like, I got to close this deal, it's the end of the quarter or else. Coming from a place of, there's 8 billion people on the planet. You buy, don't buy. I've got enough other people to talk to. But you need to buy for your reasons. And I uncovered those. So let me tell you why you need to do this right now.
Right. And then make the logical next step. Here's what I suggest. It's like you're going to the doctor almost, where you go in and, you know, my knee hurts. All right. So tell me about, you know, where were you? What'd you do? What kind of pain is it? Does it hurt here? And you drill down to the core reason what's going on. And then they prescribe a next step of that. If it makes sense, you're going to jump at it. If it doesn't, you're going to ask more questions and work through it. And that's really how sales calls should go, especially the top of funnel. You know, the fact that you're really a detective trying to find out what's going on, or a doctor that's trying to diagnose how acute is your pain. And you can do so in a way that's very endearing, but also is pleasantly persistent and I think that's the type of thing too that I get a lot is, I don't want to bother people, or I feel like I'm bothering them. Oh. But this persuasive section in your book really talks about, you're not bothering people. You're instead getting an understanding of where they are on the spectrum of making a decision that might be right for them now. But even it's okay. Like you said, if it's not a good time now, then maybe someday it will be. Let's keep in contact because things change. You never know. And I think a lot of times reps are on, they have this hope thing going on. The hope of, if I can just say the right thing, it's going to convince them now. And I think that's a, you know, that's not a good way to organize your business and organize your flow of conversations. There are going to be, and as we all know, a large number of people who aren't ready yet. Just they're not there yet. Respect that and work with that. Suggest some alternatives for them. But I think, all in all, you do have to go through that process. And I appreciate you articulating it that way, because it, to me, it's like it's a big blob. I mean, I don't really know, you know, the order in which. And if you do it sort of naturally, that's the hardest part of trying to figure out how to teach others. Because, okay, now where do I start? So I very much appreciate you putting it into a framework like that. That's great.
Yeah. And to your pestering comment, to me, two things happen when people feel like they're pestering and then they fall under this order taker category that I would say. One is they're selling crap that people don't actually need or want. And I am speaking specifically or including also B2B, SaaS and all of those companies. Like, this isn't just like consumer crap that people don't need. I mean, business crap, because you're the 19th CRM that somebody isn't going to use and you think it's the best CRM on the planet. But it's either not, or it's not a good fit, or you don't believe in it. Now, I think there's ways to innovate and improve. I think a lot of people are starting things and selling things that nobody cares about or wants. So that's part of it. And then the other part is, people usually feel like they're a pest and pestering somebody and chasing somebody because they don't actually know why that person wants to buy. Like, that's the biggest game changer, is that if you actually know why that person wants or needs what you have, then in your follow-ups, it's very specific. Hey, we talked, you know, you told me this, we were going to help solve this. You know, when can we talk more about it? Right now, I'm trying to help you with that. And I think that's so huge. And it's funny talking about your doctor example, because that's what I talk about all the time and relate it to that, especially when it's your responsibility. And, you know, I think that's a strong corollary for people to treat their role like a professional role, especially in sales, is to mimic what happens. Like, you don't, if you break your leg and you go into the emergency room, the doctor, you know, wouldn't do this, wouldn't do the exam, take x-rays, run the tests, come back and say, hey, so here's the x-ray. It looks like your leg's broken. You know, let me know what you want to do about it. I'll send you a follow-up email. Here's my card. I also have a brochure about broken legs. So here, take this. You know what I'll do is let's reconnect next week and let's chat again and, you know, see if this is something you want to get taken care of. It's like, no. They went through that process. You know, you're here. The doctor instead says, your leg's broken. Here's the diagnosis. We need to fix it. Any questions? Okay, hold on. This is going to hurt, but then you'll get better. And when you do that, it makes that huge shift.
Yeah. And it gets down to the root cause of what's really bothering them. Because another example for me would be, my lead generation program doesn't work. Well, that could mean like 100 different things.
Right.
And if you take it at the face value instead of that, I mean, we learned root cause analysis when I was in engineering, and that's a similar process for asking questions, is to get down to the bare bones of what it is that is causing them pain or unwanted outcomes or risks or obstacles, whatever it is. But you need to get down to that level. And at the same time, as you said, when you were asking those questions, they're thinking, boy, they really understand what I'm going through. I've had a lot of sales. You really know my thing, don't you?
Yeah. Well, and a lot of salespeople are just, usually what happens is they've had some kind of bad experience where they asked lots of questions and then somebody rejected them and said, you don't need to know all this stuff. Just tell me how you're going to help me. And then it imprinted in their mind. Or they flash back to when they were a teenager and they started liking that new boy or girl. And at the dinner table, the parents are just grilling them. It feels like grilling. Right. They're not. It's just asking questions, right? And so you think, I don't want to do that to other people because I hate when people are nosy in my business. And that makes you a superficial salesperson because you don't actually know what the other person wants or needs.
Exactly. So we've been through authenticity and persuasion. And you mentioned there's the last section on, what'd you say, intangibles. So tell us about that. That sounds interesting too. Very interesting terms and phrases that, you know, for the curious self. You're like, what does that mean?
What does that mean? I wish I could say I was like a very smart marketer and I just came up with these things to like help sell more, but it's not. It's just, I'm so authentic. It just comes to me and I just do it. So intangibles, if for anyone that's like a fan of sports or familiar with sports, intangibles are usually those little things that somebody does where it's not tracked, it's not measured. So in sports, I'm more of a basketball fan, like the hustle plays, the getting in people's way, mind games, like all those are weird intangibles that don't show up on a stat sheet, but it's the difference between winning and losing against a professional. So I'm a professional basketball player. You're a professional basketball player. I got to get an edge. The way to get an edge is an intangible. What most salespeople don't realize is that you are playing against a professional, your customer, who's way better at being themselves and not buying than you have been so far in your experience, because everyone has that primal part of their brain, the amygdala, which still thinks it's 10,000 years ago on the savannah, and that if you eat the wrong berry, it will kill you, or there's a saber-toothed tiger trying to kill you. And so you're playing against a professional, which is this unconscious mind that's so tough to crack because it doesn't like change. Change equals death.
Right.
And so intangibles are these little things. Now, one intangible that order takers do a lot, for an example, is they pause. And I'm not talking like the strategic pause, like, okay, Mary Lou, it's going to be, you know, $30,000 pause, right? I'm not talking that, like strategic negotiation pause. I mean, like, you ask me a question, I answer, and then I pause and I leave this vacancy, and nature hates a vacuum. And so what happens is your prospect who's scared, if they weren't scared, they would have bought it already, right? The fact that they haven't bought means there's something you have to overcome. And so in that vacuum, your prospect will come up with another question and another question. And order takers pause instead of going back to where they were or transitioning. They lose control and then they lose the whole thing. And it's one of those things where I can listen to anybody's conversation and tell if they tend to be more of an order taker just based on things like that. where if you do that, it just signals the other person is in control.
In control.
Yeah. And most mediocre salespeople who aren't getting the results they want, they're not good enough to wrestle back the control. And I call it a death by 1,000 punches. They just end up like just getting knocked out. That's it.
Right. And that's a skill that definitely you can practice, because we've had a lot of interviews lately with some people and we've thrown those curveballs at them. And it's been interesting to see how many people can get us back on track and versus going down the rabbit hole of the curveball with us. So that's very interesting. I like that. The other thing that hit me when you said about basketball, there's a famous saying from Wayne Gretzky, who's a hockey player, that he skates to where the puck is going, I think is how he says it, instead of where the puck is. And that is, to me, a big intangible, because that's what sets him apart. It's not measured, but it's something that definitely sets him apart as one of the greatest hockey players of all time.
Yeah. And so there was some miscellaneous stuff that wouldn't fall under persuasion that I put in the intangibles. It's, you know, it's saying no when you need to tell somebody no, and for the right reasons. It's the referral game,
being honest,
you know,
about
all
it.
Those things. Yeah. That's really the difference between high level, highly effective sales professionals is those intangibles, because the rest of it's just a process.
Yeah. And you mentioned, I think, early on about referrals. That's something that did you put that in the intangibles area? I can't remember.
It is.
I looked
up. Yep.
Okay. That's a big thing now. A big thing because of COVID. We're right in the middle of a pandemic as we're having this conversation. And there are certain channels of contact that just went away from us. And so building your network out and relying on people to assist you in the process is always welcomed, especially now. With GDPR, we're getting a lot now into these do not contact protocols, especially in Europe, that are basically cutting us our arm off when it comes to channels of reaching out to people, like the phone.
Right.
And versus email. So I think referrals is a big thing. I'm curious as to what do authenticity and persuasion have to do with the referral process?
Well, the part of the challenge is that most people in sales that I've experienced who are struggling, right? There's the people who aren't struggling and they're doing great. They're operating like a professional. Then there's the ones who are struggling and they're too short-term focused to have the relationships that then lead to referrals. And I don't mean sales cycle. I just mean in general. It's like, I need this deal now and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get this now, right? Again, primal part of our brain, 10,000 years ago, wake up hungry. You need to eat today or you might starve to death. So what do I have to go get? For the referral side under authentic persuasion, it's really about act like a hunter, but think like a farmer. So you can't also just rely on a pure farming referral strategy. Most people can't, because you plant those seeds, it takes a long time to grow. You're going to starve to death before, you know, it's time to pick an apple off of that tree. And so you've got to do both, but you've got to make your sales. And then if you do it in a proper way that's relational, like you talked about a while ago, then you're building these relationships, which then have the value and you under promised, over delivered. And as a salesperson, you set the right expectation and your company actually fulfilled what you said they would do, which a lot of salespeople, that's not what happens. They kind of either ignore some facts or they promise the moon, and then you're not going to get referrals that way. And so it's really about, doing both short and long term.
Wonderful. So the book is Selling with Authentic Persuasion. I love that term. Transform from Order Taker to Quota Breaker. Jason, thank you so much for your time. I'm going to be putting all your links, because you have a bunch of different services you offer. And if you'd like to talk about that a little bit, about how people can get in touch with you and what kind of services that you provide to help us be better at our profession that we all love.
I appreciate that. So I've made it easy. If you go to jasoncutter.com, it's a hub for everything that I have. So I'm very active on LinkedIn if you want to see content there. I have the book, which is on authenticpersuasion.com, also on Amazon. And then I have my consulting side where I help organizations improve their sales process, build sales processes, and just create winning teams of quota breakers instead of order takers. And so you can find that through there. And then I also work with individual sales reps and managers to help them become more effective.
Wonderful. Again, thank you so much for your time. We very much appreciate you sharing your work with us. Guys, really, this is a great book to add to your arsenal, if you will, your toolkit of sales books, because I think, like anything, we can always get better and more confident and more secure in our selling strategies and our selling methodologies, our skills, our mindset. And it does take that holistic approach of mindset, skill set, and as Jason said, process, in order to be able to maximize your return on effort and take that hour and multiply your results. Thanks so much, Jason, for being a guest today on our podcast.
Thanks for having me, Mary Lou.